So, I guess we have our guest here, which is awesome. His name is Sam Feldman. In 1990, Sam and Gretchen Feldman sold a very successful chain of men's apparel stores and retired to Martha's Vineyard, which is in Massachusetts. It's an island, where they both became involved as donors and volunteers to many island charities. In 2007, Mrs. Feldman learned she had cancer, and she died a year later. They'd been married for 53 years, and Sam was 80 at the time of her death. His story of dealing with that and the movement that it's inspiring was featured recently in the New York Times, and it's a really interesting story, so I've invited Sam here to talk about it. Hi, Sam.
Hello, Hollis. I'm calling you and online from Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, overlooking the beautiful Atlantic Ocean. So we're a continent apart, but I hear you loud and clear.
And I hear you as well. And I'm like, say hi to the Atlantic for me.
I will. And the ocean responds to you in its own way.
It waves, right? Anyway.
It waves. Yeah. Exactly.
So tell me about what happened after your wife died.
When Gretchen died, I wasn't prepared for her death, and although she had been ill for a year, and I had a black cloud that enveloped me, that was all over me after her death. And after a loving relationship of 53 years, the suddenness of being alone just overtook me. And I didn't know what to do. I needed help. So I called the hospice in Martha's Vineyard to ask them if they had a bereavement group. And they said yes, they did, but it had already started. There were six sessions in the group, and two of them had already passed. So therefore, the people had bonded together. And I said, well, maybe you could ask them if I could get into the group, even though they've bonded together, and I'll stay up nights, and I'll study hard, and I'm really grieving, and I'm a fast learner, and I really need some help. They said, well, it's all women. And so that, I started thinking about it, and I also started thinking about what my wife had left me with, an admonition. She said, Sam, after I die, please don't accept casseroles with email addresses on them. And so I thought about what I could do for self-help.
Wait a minute. What does she mean by don't accept casseroles with email addresses? I'm a little confused. Does she mean don't accept it for people
about
who are far away?
What happens to widowers? And one of the things that happens to widowers, because of the statistics, and there are so many more women out there than men, that men become a desired product out in the field. And so we joked about what would happen after she died, and the joke was, well, you know, you're going to be besieged with casseroles. So I was in no mood to accept casseroles at that time. I just was bereft and feeling lonely. We had been together for so long, and all of a sudden, instead of there being two, there was just one. And there was no one in our house. And it was lonely, and it was winter, and it was dark on Martha's Vineyard. And when I came into the house, it was dark and silent, but I was surrounded by her art, which was absolutely lovely and warm and bright. But there was no person, and the loneliness just overcame me. And I'm sure that many in your audience tonight have the same feelings, or they've had a parent who has died and left a widow or widower. And it's awful. It was not only awful for me, but it was awful for my two daughters, who had a fabulous relationship with Gretchen, even though one lived in Los Angeles and one lived in New York. They spoke two or three times a day. And when she died, there was a tremendous vacuum in their lives as well as mine. So I called hospice and I said, could you give me the names of some men whose wives have died in the last 6 months or so? And they said, yes. I said, would you call them and ask them if I could give them a ring? And they said yes, and they gave me a few names after they called to get permission. And I went to lunch with them, and they cried, and I cried. And I said, why don't we get together and talk about this? And that was the genesis of the men's bereavement group on Martha's Vineyard.
So what came out of your talks as a group? Anything in particular, any particular attitudes, or what did you notice?
Well, the big thing was the difference between men's groups and women's groups. I attended some groups that were predominantly women, and the men and I could just not let their hair down. We didn't cry. We wanted to maintain our macho dignity and our strength, and so therefore we just couldn't expose the way we really felt. And the difference was that when our men started getting together, we could just talk and let out our emotions.
That's interesting, because it's not something you hear about men doing sort of naturally with other men.
Well, it's a struggle for men. Men are not used to expressing their emotions very well, and they say, well, I'm going to assuage myself by doing lots of things, by going hunting and gathering, by sawing wood, by having lots of friends, and that for many people just doesn't work, because it doesn't solve the loneliness of not having a spouse in your life.
So I've heard that, you know, women tend to mourn and men tend to sort of replace their wives. What do you think about that? Is that what happened to the men in your group?
Well, I don't know. I don't think that's totally accurate. I think there are great similarities in the way women and men mourn. The dissimilarity is the way they express their feelings and the freedom that they have to talk. Women have girlfriends. They have lady friends. Men rarely have intimate boyfriends. They might have sports friends, or they might have going out drinking beer friends, or they might have all kinds of athletic friends, but they don't have male friends who they share intimacies with.
So how do you kind of get over that in a group of men?
Well, you know, the catch 22 of the national organization that I started is trying to get men to open up, and also to have men form these groups in other cities around the country, because we formed ours organically on Martha's Vineyard, and now we have an executive director of this group because it has been so helpful. As a matter of fact, Hollis, today there were 12 men at my house on this little island in the off season who wanted to express themselves. There are always new ones coming in. There were two new fellows today who have gone through a trauma in their lives, and they want to talk about it. And many of them have tried mixed gender or all women's groups and have found them totally unsatisfactory. So we would like to start groups around the country if we can find people in each town around the country who would start a group and who would feel so in pain that they want to help other people with their pain. And our national group is called the Men's Bereavement Network, and we now have a website called mensbereavement.org. And there is all kinds of helpful information on that website, and we would like to encourage other people to do it. Now, some of the men in our group have been there for two and a half years and are into new relationships. But they are so dedicated to helping other people that as a new person comes in, they just want to make sure that that new person doesn't have the black cloud and the suffering that they went through and that I went through.
So I'm really curious, do you have, I don't know, protocols or something like, because I'm trying to imagine, you know, a group of men who are not used to sharing their feelings with anybody, let alone a bunch of other men, sitting in a room together, and somehow there's some magic that happens where they can open up. So
it is magical.
What is that?
You're right. You're absolutely right. There, it is magic. And part of the magic is that it is peer-led. It is led by someone who has gone through the experience and not a professional social worker or psychiatrist. And the peer-led aspect of it is the uniqueness of it. And we start our meetings with a funny story or a joke and end with something that's humorous. So it is not all dark and dismal. We always end up with it being brighter. And the people who come, as the new people come in, they always say, oh, thank you. And I say, thank you for what? And they generally say, I felt so lonely before I came here, and now I feel that I'm not alone. So the rewards of doing it are just fabulous.
So is it just kind of the idea that, say, you are willing to share your story that allows, like, it's kind of modeling the behavior for somebody else? Because, like, I know after disaster, like, right after 9/11, because I lived in New York and New Jersey for a long time, I knew a lot of people there, and I thought, well, the only way that I can help is just to call people and what I, you know, and offer my skills. But all anybody really wanted to do was tell their story. So well, is that it? It's just like, we need to tell our stories?
Telling the story is therapeutic. And the story is told to new people about the people who are in the group and how their wives died, and some of them were traumatic deaths, and the sickness they went through, and the fact that the men were caretakers. In our group, some of them were caretakers for 5, 6, 7 years, and they devoted their lives to their wives. And then all of a sudden, that aspect of their life, that devotion to their wife, is over. And there's an added emptiness from that, because their lives are full of caregiving and caretaking, and then it's over.
So part of the purpose of your life is over.
Well, yes, and that's where the black cloud comes in, and where the health of the person is involved. There are health issues also that we feel that we have an impact on. If we can help move someone through that grief stage at their own pace, of course, but if we can share our stories with them and let them know how we've gone through it and come out of it, and half of the people in our group have new relationships, and which brings about another set of problems for everybody. When the men have a relationship with a new lady, then they start having problems with their children. And they have someone in their house who's replacing their mom. And there is all kinds of friction, jealousy, and difficulty with the children that we have found. And we help men get through that.
That's really interesting. I'm curious about if having a relationship with a new woman brings up issues related to their late wife, like something about, I don't know, like betrayal or, I don't know, anything like that?
Brings up relationships regarding what? Unless I didn't hear.
Well, okay. I'm just wondering if getting into a new relationship brings back stuff from the old relationship, good or bad.
Yeah, I guess it does, But when people start a new relationship, they are looking for a person who, one of the things is fill the void, and what I've seen is they are looking for the same kind of relationship that they had when they were 19, 20, 21, 22. They're looking for the same characteristics in a person, and many of the men in that have come through our group have also gone onto social networking sites. After 7 months to a, 6-7 months to a year, they have gone on social networking sites. They have met women through that and have developed relationships after much dating.
So when you say social networking here, you're talking about things like Match.com.
Yeah, Match, eHarmony. But they realize that they cannot replace their wives. And I'm in a new relationship, and it's a lovely lady, but one of the things that makes it so great is that she is not like my wife at all in many ways. So it's very fresh and new. And even though I think about my wife constantly and have all kinds of triggers all of the time, I'm in a relatively happy relationship.
This is going to sound kind of funny because I'm young enough, I've never dated anybody who has lost a spouse. I mean, it can happen at any age, but, you know. Is it ever like there are three people in the relationship?
You mean a menage?
Well, you know, like you said, you're thinking about
your
wife constantly.
Oh, you mean your spouse, your former wife? Oh,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because in many cases, and we talked about it today, that your wife is your governor in a way. She is helping you in your life and helping you make decisions and telling you when you're out of line and affirming your thoughts and sometimes questioning what you do. And as a governor of your behavior. And yes, that is there all the time, and so therefore your thoughts are certainly with your deceased spouse, and that is difficult for a person to move on, but you go on living and you do the best you can, and even though your wife has played a tremendous role in your life and your psyche, you have to live your own life and move on. And the thought that there's a time constraint or a time limit or the denial, anger, bargaining, Kugler-Ross theory is outdated. People go through this grieving process at their own pace and on their own time frame and the way they feel comfortable and the way their mind and their heart tells them to do it. So a lot of people say, oh, well, I should be here at this time, and I should, in 6 months and then a year I'll be there. That's baloney. It just doesn't happen. People do it at their own pace. What, you know, Hollis, can we ask our listeners what their experience has been and whether they have any advice for our men's bereavement group?
That's a great idea. The number here, 888-874-4888, and call right now, 888-874-4888. While I'm waiting for your calls, I have a quick question. I have, like, one more question. This is going to sound like a funny question. You were talking about how your wife is your governor, and what I want to know is it because it's kind of like, I almost want to say, an introjected part of yourself, like what she would have said or thought or done becomes part of you? Or is it because you have an experience of her actually being there, but not with a body?
No, I think it becomes a part of you. When you are with a person for 20, 30, 40, 53 and a half years, as I was with Gretchen, you are one. You're united. Your thoughts and your actions and frequently your behavior become one. And you think of yourself as an inseparable team. And when that team is separated, that is horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I mean, for any happy marriage, I'm sure that's true. One other thing, and if you want to call in, call now, 888-874-4888. In the New York Times article, it said something that really struck me, which was that men tend to think of their wives as if she were a part of his body, which I don't think women do about their husbands.
Mm-hmm. Well, because basically I think that the women are the caretakers and the nurturers, and men are recipients of that nurturing. So it's different. And men have been nurtured all their lives. Their mothers nurture them from infancy, from the time they were born. They are nurtured by a woman. And it's the same in marriage. There's a nurturing relationship. There's a great deal of reciprocity, but women are generally coming from a more self-sufficient place.
I see your point. I do.
Do you?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I think of my husband, I mean, yes, he's nurturing, and yet he refers to me as his other lung, which would never have occurred to me to say about him. So and maybe that's why it struck me so much about being part of your own body, you know?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You are organically together with your lungs and the rest of your body, including your brain and your psyche. So it's different that women and men do look at things from different perspectives. And I think the healing process after the death of a spouse is also quite different.
In what way?
Well, because men do and women talk. Basically, that's the way it is. Men go out and chop the wood and collect the meat. And women are more verbal and express their emotions. And men don't do that. They express their emotions generally through action.
And yet what you're saying is the talking is what's healing.
It is healing if you can get them to talk. And our group of all men that are peer-led do talk and do open up. It's quite remarkable. The dynamics are something I never expected, Hollis, but they are there. And you use the word magical, and it is magical. And I still would like to hear from some of your listeners to hear what they think.
Well, nobody's called, so if people can call you directly or email you directly, if somebody wants to talk to you to answer your question, how would they get in touch with you?
We have an 800 number that is 800-309-3658. I'll repeat that. 1-800-309-3658. And it's mensbereavement.org.
Cool.
And
hey, Sam, thank you so much.
We are prepared to respond to anyone who contacts us. We want to help. I have gotten calls from all over the country, men who are really hurting and have had all kinds of problems as a result of the death of their wives, some even having been really in bad shape. So,
well, listen, Sam, thanks for being here. I hope you can help lots of people. Give that phone number out one more time, and then we got to go to break.
800-309-3658, and thank you very much, Hollis. It's been a
pleasure.
You're
welcome.